I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This episode is sponsored by Brian and Sari. Thank you to the Patreon supporters for this particular episode. If you're interested in getting bonus episodes, early release episodes, episodes without ads on them, come on over to the Patreon page and join us. It is www.patreon.com/thelifeshiftpodcast. I appreciate you guys. Thank you for listening. Here's this week's episode.
This, in addition to my chemistry class, just changed everything for me. I felt really connected again. I was happy. I was like, this is something I wanted to do. I didn't know how much I wanted to do it until I got into that class. And I thought maybe, you know, another 20 years wasn't so bad if I could be in this kind of position where I was teaching something totally outside of chemistry, still teaching chemistry and loving every minute of it. But now I had a new challenge and it was fun.
On this week's episode, I speak with Lorraine Connell, and she is a business owner, an educator, and a podcast host. Her podcast is called Education Unimagined, and she speaks with former students and actually other students about their experiences and how student leadership can be used to improve education throughout the country and hopefully the world. On this conversation, though, we talk about her joy of teaching and how much she really enjoyed teaching chemistry, of all things. In the conversation, we talk a little bit about how she felt like she needed to level up or needed to change something because she couldn't really picture herself doing the same thing for the next 20, 30 years. And so she tried a couple things that didn't work out, and then she felt a little less supported by administration and other people in the school that she was in. Then she was exposed to something in student leadership that really lit her up again, and she felt that passion for teaching, and she felt the passion for working with those students. So I hope you enjoy this episode where we kind of talk through this educator's journey to finding that true passion and discovering what she wanted to do moving forward. And without further ado, here's the episode with Lorraine. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Life Shift podcast. I am here with Lorraine, and I'm excited to have this conversation today. Welcome.
Thank you.
The reason why I'm excited is because you're going to be talking about an industry that many of my listeners are in, because I am in it, and I am an educator, and I've been an educator in the higher education space since 2008. And so naturally, I know a lot of people in that space, and so they're listening. And your story, I think, will resonate with a lot of people too, because a lot of us work within constraints and things that maybe frustrate us or find places where we're not being as fulfilled where we need to be. And so, you know, I know that's not your full story, but I think a lot of the things that you're going to say, a lot of my listeners will be able to relate to. So I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I think the same is true. And I also think that my story, while unique to me, is not necessarily unique to so many of us. And so it is important, I feel, for me to share my story so that others can hear it and know that, you know, we'll get into it, but that there is a path. And maybe we don't know what that path is, but it's there.
Yeah, and I think, too, it doesn't necessarily have to relate to educators either. I think your story is very relatable to people in any industry, in any kind of path that they once felt was a certain way and then realized it wasn't and created a new path. So I think this story will resonate. And all along, my goal with the podcast has been that each episode finds the one set of ears that needs to hear it at that moment in time. And so I think you're right. I think, you know, there's going to be a part of your story that's going to click with at least one listener at a time and hopefully more. So why don't we get into it? I like to have the guests kind of paint the picture of what your life was like before you got to kind of that pivotal moment. And then we can chat about how that really changed you in that moment. So would you like to paint?
I sure can. So I think there are two pivotal moments. And the pivotal moment that happened in COVID was more dramatic. But as I've been listening to your podcast and as I have been really thinking about life, I think there are so many times where our life takes a different path than we really thought it was going to take. So I'm going to go back to where I think the first shift really happened for me. I was 10 years into teaching. I loved my job. I loved teaching. I loved the classroom. I loved my students. I, strangely enough, really loved my subject matter, which is chemistry. And I would remember in open house, I would do this sort of thing where I would ask my parents, how many of you had a terrible chemistry experience? Or how many of you hate chemistry or can't do chemistry? And 9 times out of 10, almost every hand went up. And I would say my real goal for teaching chemistry is so that when your kids grow up and they're at their parent conferences, they don't raise their hands, because it really is about the teacher and about how the teacher connects you to the subject matter. And that was my goal. I loved coming to school every day. I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher when I was young. So many people will say, I always knew I was going to be a teacher, but I didn't. I came into teaching in a really unique way. But once I got to teaching, and actually it's really funny, the first day of teaching, I remember this pretty distinctly. I had not done any teacher training. I just, you know, jumped right in and I was in front of my students and I was awesome. I was on fire. I had energy. And as soon as they left the classroom, I burst into tears. Like, what am I doing? I don't know. I have no idea what I'm doing. But when the kids were there, I was perfect. And well, I want to say that I was not perfect, but I was who I wanted to be at that moment.
You envisioned it. So the tears were like sad tears? Or they were like, I can't believe I'm doing this?
I think they were like, what am I? Like, just disbelief. Like, who do I think I am that I can be in front of this group of students? I honestly think that I'm an introvert. And I think there are a lot of teachers who tend to be introverts, but you wouldn't know by seeing them in the classroom.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think, I think a lot of people will relate to that feeling of imposter syndrome of like, even in the podcasting space. I don't know how you have a podcast, which we'll talk about, but I don't know if you felt that way with your first couple episodes when you dropped them, or even now, you know, I get nervous before every recording because I'm like, I just want it to be perfect, or I want the guests to have a great time and I want the listener to really enjoy it. And it's like, do I belong in this space? What am I doing? So I can relate to that feeling of like, whew, after your students left the classroom.
I mean, I didn't continue to cry much, you know, in through my 10 years, but like that first couple of weeks, it was like, where am I going with this?
Yeah, well, and I mean, teaching a science topic too, I think you traditionally will have students come in not excited about science, right? So there's an extra layer of stress, I would imagine, to how do I connect this topic that they're already coming in with some kind of feeling about that's not a positive one typically. How do I connect with them and show them the relevancy and enjoy it and not dread coming to my class?
Absolutely.
That's a hard space. So you were teaching for 10 years and just loving it.
Yeah. So here we are 10 years into this job. I, at the time, like I said, I came to teaching sort of in a circuitous way. And so I was not right out of college, but I was not older. So I'm looking at 10 years. I know I love what I'm doing, but I'm looking at retirement being like 25, 30, maybe 35 years away and thinking, how am I going to do this for another 20, 25 years? There needs to be something else that I can do. And so this is where the shift was. Like, how am I going to last doing what I'm doing, loving what I'm doing, seeing a lot of other teachers in, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years away from retirement, kind of hating their jobs. And so I was like, okay, maybe administration, maybe that's where I need to go. And it was not something that I wanted to do. And so the shift was, let me apply for a middle management position. We'll call that, you know, department head or coordinator, whatever you want to call that middle management position. And I applied. I, you know, buffed up my resume. It had been 10 years since I did anything with my resume. And I applied, and I was not the top candidate. But this job, this middle management position, is yours until you don't want it anymore. And the person who got it was about my age, and I was devastated. I knew he was the better candidate. I knew that, but for me, I didn't see another path. And so this is 10 years into teaching, and I just kept going.
Yeah. I mean, so like at that moment, you were like dreading. I mean, you were still enjoying it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you were still enjoying it, but something in you was dreading the fact that you had to do it for another. It's so interesting, right? Like, how can we love something and also dread doing it for the rest of our lives and not having any forward motion, I guess. Do you think a lot of that, I think for me, until probably like 5 years ago or so, till like my late 30s, I was under the movement of, you know, society told me that I had to do this and I always had to be progressing. Did any of that relate? Like, did you grow up knowing like your expectations or the expectations of you by society was that you had to, 10 years was too much in one role. So you need to move to the next thing and you need to, you know, you need to keep progressing. Was any of that kind of playing in your head?
I think so. I mean, I think as we look back, I came from the business world. I went into teaching. The business world, you move up the ladder, and I didn't see a ladder. And, or if the ladder was there, it wasn't a ladder I wanted to climb.
there was one rung, right? And someone was on it, like someone was already on the ladder. Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that coming from, you know, I got my MBA and then I worked in a bunch of small businesses, and then I came to a private higher education space from that. So it was always, I felt like every year or more of teaching, be like, okay, what's next? And for me, fortunately, there was a ladder, but I can imagine, I know how it felt. Like, I still liked what I was doing, but I was like, this is like, I'm doing the same thing over and over again, right? It just feels like a Groundhog Day at some point. So you didn't get that job. Did you continue? Like, how did that affect you and what you were doing? Were you still a great teacher?
I don't think I knew at the time how much it impacted me, because it didn't feel like a change. It felt like a disappointment. It felt like a devastation of like, oh, okay, I am not good enough. I think that's where, I mean, I'm sure I was raised and had that perfectionism trait in my upbringing, but I think it really started to come out for me then, because I also was like, okay, so middle management, and I really didn't want to be an administrator. I think that sort of like clarified to me that that's not the path that I wanted to take. It wasn't available to me, and maybe I didn't really want it. But so I went back to my classroom and I looked at what I was doing, and I still really loved what I was doing because it was about the connections I was making with kids. It was about the relationships. It was all there for me. But I wanted to do something different, and I didn't want to not teach chemistry. I really love teaching chemistry. And so I started to try and innovate a little bit. And it was about this time in my career where the flipped classroom was the new thing. And in chemistry, it made a ton of sense, because my practice at the time was teach to the kids, you know, like direct teach them, let them practice a little bit, and then send them home to do homework all by themselves. And it made sense to me to flip it so that they were doing the passive learning at home without me, and then coming in and doing the active learning with me. The problem was I didn't have a really great way of describing that to people. So I was like, I am not teaching them. What I should have said was that students were home doing the passive learning, but where they're doing the active learning with me, the teacher. And so I think, you know, that wasn't a shift, but that was a moment in time where I think there was less confidence in me. I was doing something innovative and my administration didn't know anything. And so I didn't really get the I've got your back kind of support that I needed. And while I still firmly believe that the flipped approach in chemistry is the ideal way of learning, I wish I could have gone back and known the impact choosing those words would have had on my relationship with administration.
Did you feel that your relationship with the administration changed because you applied for that job and then didn't get it and someone else was chosen? And then that person knows that you went for this role and now maybe feels threatened. Was there any kind of inkling where it felt like now you had to prove something more?
That's a really great question. So the easy answer would have been yes, but this person who got the job was a wonderful person and he was a mentor to me. He actually had my back. It was upper administration who had done some shifting and some changing that I felt didn't have my back and didn't understand. And I think many of your listeners who are educators will understand this to be true, is that we often operate in a silo, and our administration may come in to observe us in pockets, but either we're putting on our best show, or, you know, we've prepared, and or they step in and chaos is happening. There's not a real understanding of what happens in a classroom on a day-to-day basis unless you're really present as an administrator. And administrators don't have time. I know that. But to not know what your teachers are doing, it is hard to have their back, and it's hard to support them when they are trying to be innovative.
Now, I don't know if this is true or not. In your chemistry class, were the grades something that administration would be looking at? And the reason I ask that, because, you know, some of the classes that have, it's harder and students are not doing as well, then that raises a red flag. And now you're doing something innovative that they don't understand, which is not really that innovative. It's, you know, like, it makes sense, right? But they don't understand it. And like, why are you changing things? Because this class is already hard. So did you feel, is that something that was a case with the chemistry class? Like, were students struggling more than, say, an English class?
So my chemistry class students, they were always pretty average, right? You know, you had your bell curve. And at the time, I was not doing a really great job. Well, at the time, I was still doing very traditional grading where, you know, it was based out of 100 and the harder questions were worth more points, which in my mind seemed to make a lot of sense. And I had multiple questions asking the same concept. You know, I was also learning to be a different type of grading teacher. And so again, breaking an innovative way, the school itself was starting to shift from the 100-point scale to competency-based grading. So a lot of these changes were happening at the same time. And I don't think that grades were the impetus for the lack of support. I think it was the message that I wasn't teaching.
That makes sense. So you're doing all this. Were you still enjoying it as this period was starting to happen where people aren't supporting you and things? Like, how did you navigate, I love teaching, but also like nobody's supporting what I'm trying to do?
It was very incremental. It never felt like there was a moment in time until the pandemic. Every year it became a little less apparent that I was a favored teacher. It became like a little more difficult to establish that what I was doing in my class was valid. My reviews, we did this self-review practice. My reviews were still really good, but there was an eroding, and there was eroding in a lot of different places in the school at the time. Different administration was turning over and, you know, things were becoming more busy for administrators, so they were less engaged, less involved. I never had any classroom management problems because the students felt heard, the students felt seen, the students felt challenged, and they always knew I had their back. You know, so if I had a kid who didn't do well on a test, I would applaud them, because really, if you're getting 100 in this class, then you already know everything and you shouldn't be in this particular class. I want to challenge you. And I think, you know, for a lot of kids, it was the first time that they were challenged, not because they were with me, but because chemistry's hard. And like I said, like, my ultimate goal as a teacher was to make sure that when kids left chemistry, they didn't hate it, they didn't feel like they couldn't do it, and they wouldn't raise their hand and say it was a terrible experience.
you said it was incremental. Was that mentally incremental for you, or more just like on paper you were seeing that you were being unfavored? Were you like slowly like, how do I keep doing this? How many years after that 10-year mark when you applied are we talking to get you to this pandemic period?
It was 5 years later where something landed in my lap, and I felt that same excitement that I had felt that first week that I told you where I burst into tears. So my mentor was moving on, and he was teaching a class called peer leadership. And so it was student leadership development, and kids were actually given course credit to learn leadership skills. And this, in addition to my chemistry class, just changed everything for me. I felt really connected again. I was happy. I was like, this is something I've wanted to do. I didn't know how much I wanted to do it until I got into that class. And I thought maybe, you know, another 20 years wasn't so bad if I could be in this kind of position where I was teaching something totally outside of chemistry, still teaching chemistry and loving every minute of it. But now I had a new challenge, and it was fun.
So you found that moment. What year was this?
I think it was 2018.
2018. So you're doing this and you're doing chemistry, you're doing this student leadership thing, which, you know, makes sense because you said you want to make those relationships with the students. You want to help them not raise their hand. But in the same point, it's like you're giving them life skills that are going to help them for the rest of time. Whereas some people may look at chemistry and say only certain parts of chemistry or the idea of chemistry are going to be helpful here, there, and everywhere. So I'm sure you were seeing more light bulbs and those kind of moments in the leadership class, and probably like more authentic connections, right, with the students and then maybe chemistry, because there's also that sometimes there's that wall between the teacher and the student with the grade, like, you don't like me, you know, like, well, your grade's really not about how much I like you or not. I think you're great, but your grade is, you know, it's not great. So I think in a leadership class, there's probably more opportunity for a different type of relationship as it comes to assignments and whatnot.
So leadership allowed me to have students for more than 1 year. When I was just their chemistry teacher, I saw incredible growth in their 1 year of experience with me that, you know, it was almost disappointing that I had to like shuffle them off to another class. And I also started teaching AP chemistry, which again allowed me another opportunity to teach the kids that I had for 1 year. Some of them came back for another year. And I didn't have the confidence in myself to be teaching that AP chemistry class. But I don't know why I didn't have the confidence to do that. And so I taught that pretty similarly the number of years that I did this leadership class. So I was teaching now chemistry, AP chemistry, and leadership. And I was happy. I was challenged. And I felt like school could be sustainable for me. But there were little things, again, little things, the community that I loved in the school that I started with, it wasn't the same anymore. With all of the changes in administration, I didn't have those relationships anymore. And I loved the leadership class, but I saw that leadership was a privilege. And so we would have an application, and the unfortunate thing was that we excluded certain kids from being in the class. And there were a variety of reasons why they weren't accepted into the program. But one thing that stood out to me was there wasn't a lot of applications. So there were kids who I saw as leaders who weren't applying. There were kids who didn't really make the mark who were being excluded. I understood that students, you know, if you make a big mistake, that there are consequences and you're in this really prestigious class, you are giving some incredible responsibilities. There should be some pretty significant consequences. But then I started to remember that, like, not every basketball player is born with natural abilities to play basketball. And we provide them with practice. We provide them with training. We provide them with coaching. Why aren't we doing the same thing for leadership? And so this is where things started to really change for me. I wanted to bring in these kids who needed the training, and administration most certainly did not.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Because it was, they want the high scores. They want to prove the value through data and not through growth.
And they want to be able to say to every student in that school, you need to be this good to be a leader. You need to be perfect to be a leader for us.
So what did that start doing to you when they were like, no thanks?
It was March of 2020, and I was still in this class, and I was talking to my students. I was asking them what remote learning was for them. I started to like investigate a little bit more. I started to ask them questions, and I got an email from my administrator that actually it wasn't an email from my administrator. I got an email about a meeting that I had scheduled with another administrator about, like, here's what I think I'd like to do with my student leaders when we come back in person, because I'd love to build community together. And so I was really excited. I invited a colleague who had been working on the leadership program with me. And so I thought I was coming into this meeting talking about, you know, this idea that I had. And my head administrator came into this meeting and proceeded to yell at me in front of these other people, totally not something I expected, about something that I didn't even know about it, but it was an email that they had received from one of my student leaders about graduation and their decision and what that student felt about that decision. And this was one of my students who was not a perfect leader, and I received the brunt of that challenge to that authority. And as I am looking back, in all honesty, like, I was the teacher and I should be given this conversation, but I should have been notified about it. I might have have read the email ahead of time, maybe, but I still to this day think my student did the right thing, because they were upset. They talked, they used communication strategies, they brought the issue to the attention, and I think was the bigger leader in that situation.
And then you took the brunt of that and they yelled at you, which sounds like it probably affected you in other ways, just the way you're saying it. And not to jump ahead, but I feel like sometimes those are oh, thank you for doing that. Was that a thank you for doing that moment, looking back now?
Sure, looking back now, but I definitely did not feel that way at the time.
But it changed you, right?
It sure did. It, I knew at that moment that I no longer had the support of administration in anything that I was doing. And in August, when they said, well, you are going to be home with your student or your own children. So my children were going to be fully remote, and our school hadn't really made a decision. And I was totally fine working from home and doing the engagement with my students. But at that moment, they decided that the leadership class didn't need me anymore. And when they took that leadership class from my class list or, you know, my schedule, that was the end for me. That was the moment where I said, I no longer can be a teacher. I can no longer work in an environment where I am not supported, because everything that my being was supporting my students' learning and growing and development, and I wasn't being given the same opportunity to learn, grow, and develop.
Or even just be acknowledged that that's what you were doing. And, you know, you were just kind of being told, you know, you weren't fitting the mold, and how dare you come up with new ideas that might actually work and be helpful, but it wasn't what they wanted. And so, but you know what? I mean, looking back too, like we just said, it's sometimes these really hard moments in life are the signals, right? The flags that we pay attention, look at me, here I am.
Right. Because those signals were all over the place as I look back.
Right. You said they were dropping. Yeah.
Yeah. From 10 years forward, they were there. And I had my blinders on, and I wanted more. I really wanted more. And I really didn't think I could do anything more than be a teacher. I remember saying to my husband, to my therapist, to anybody who would listen, if I'm not a teacher, there's nothing else I can do.
So what did you do?
I got a coach. I talked to a coach and she had me write, if she and I met in 200 years, or not 200 years, if she and I met in 5 years.
200 is a long time.
That is a long time. If I met her in 5 years, what are 200 things that I would be able to tell her I was doing?
Wow.
That was hard.
It's a tall order.
It was hard. It took me quite some time to do it. But when I was done, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And it was not in a classroom.
You know, it's funny. I just had a conversation with someone that was in a really, really dark moment in their life. And they're pretty much their moment of growth or getting out of that was making a list. And so it's funny to hear you say that, like, once you put in the time and the effort, starting it's the hardest part, right? But once you get that 200 things on there, what was on it that stood out to you that was like, okay, this is where I'm going, this is what I'm doing?
It was leadership everywhere. I mean, I just kept coming back to it. You know, I thought, I always did this activity where I thought my core value was family, but after doing this list, I realized that empowerment and integrity were so paramount to me. And I can embed family into all of that, but when I like really started to have to like push beyond that top 50 where, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I can do this, I'll do this, I'll do this. And you're like, oh God, that's it. What else? And I wanted to empower kids. I wanted those kids to be so empowered that they were coming back and they were being hired by me to empower other kids. And it evolved into, I want to do this on my own. I want to develop curriculum. I want to give every kid everywhere the opportunity to develop into what they want to be and not just that small group of students who we've already identified are the natural leaders. And I think being a parent helped me really define that. It took me a while to leave. You know, it was August of 2020 that I knew that I didn't want to be there anymore. But it wasn't until June of 22 that I decided I'm done. I no longer will sign another contract and I'm going to go out and do this on my own. I don't really have I had a plan, but I didn't have like
a safety net.
No.
Yeah. Is this going to work? You know, like the questions that we can, as imposter syndrome, a fellow imposter syndrome person, you know, like you feel those, like, is this even real? Did during that period when you were like, when you were told you were not going to take that class anymore, or you were not going to teach that class anymore, and when you finally quit, were you still a happy teacher? Or was it just like, oh God, I hate coming here?
You know, when I was in my classroom, I was a happy teacher. When I was on, but as soon as I walked out of that door, I hated everything. I hated the conversations people were having with me. I hated, there was so much negativity. There was so much COVID talk. I was like, this is a toxic relationship.
Yeah, I think a lot of people listening will understand that. It's like when you're doing the thing you love, it's good. And then everything else is just like so draining that it definitely makes the thing that you used to love
painful.
Like it's like a codependent relationship. It's like, I want to stay because I love doing this, but everything else is really bringing me down. So yeah, I can relate. I think, you know, when you were saying how empowerment and you want your students and people just in general to have that and to be able to pay it forward. And I mean, wouldn't it be nice if all teachers felt that way? And that's how we approached education. I don't think we're there anymore. I don't think that's how I feel like education is very transactional these days in all levels. And so, I mean, when you were saying that, I was like, yeah. That's how people should feel in the classroom all the time and what you're doing to advance these individuals so that they can be productive members of society, right? So I'm glad that you were able to disconnect and take a chance on yourself to kind of face the things that you wanted to do, those things on the list. What did you actually do when you left?
I felt a lot of guilt.
Mm. Why? To who? The students?
Yeah. Yeah.
To yourself?
I really do love the empowerment that comes from being a classroom teacher. And I wasn't sure that I was going to feel that way again. I had in August, like I said, I had been asking my students questions and getting their advice. And I thought, I shouldn't be the only one that hears this advice. There are lots of teachers out there. And really, their advice was not all that surprising, I guess, or really hard to put into practice. So I was like, maybe I'll produce it. So I made a podcast, and you know, I love the work that I do in my podcast. I'm realizing that lots of podcasts have lots of people listening and rating and all of that, and I don't have that many. But every interview I have with a student, I leave with more knowledge of how I could have been a better teacher. And for, like I said, I was doing those interviews for about a year and a half before I left teaching. I was putting so much of what they advised me into play. And it changed everything for me with my relationships. And I already had really good relationships with kids, but this just made it so much better.
Going back to your original story of when you were 10 years in and you didn't get that job and like all the little signs like pointing you here. But at the same time, I think all those experiences make you value this more and make you better at what you're doing to serve and help empower others now, right? Because you almost, had you started the podcast when you were this happy teacher without any adversity and any, you know, animosity towards certain things, you probably wouldn't be as open or ask the right questions or find the value in it to be able to kind of help the people that need it the most. Do you agree?
I totally agree. I honestly don't think I was there to think that student voice had so much power. I loved it. I loved what they provided me as a teacher, but I definitely didn't think that their voice was on mute.
Which one do you think put you in this mind space more? Not getting that job the first time, or being yelled at in that meeting, or being told you're not teaching that class? Which one served you more in this version of you?
Well, I think being yelled at sent me to a really awful place in my brain. I was already struggling with not being perfect in my own mind. To be told I wasn't perfect really hit me the hardest and took me the longest to recover. But the fact that there was no engagement with me, there was no collaboration with me, there was none of the things that I needed, I think that served me the best in applying what I'm doing now with students.
How about personally? Personal growth, do you think that made you a better person, as tough as it was and the struggles that you went through because of it? Do you think you're better served because you were able, now that you're able to look back on it?
Don't want to say yes. I really don't. It was so hurtful. It was so heartbreaking. It was so soul crushing that I don't know that maybe it was hitting rock bottom, but I want to say that it was like putting my back against the corner when they told me that class was no longer mine that I feel like caused me the most personal growth. I was like, well,
yeah, I'll show you.
You're not going to let me teach it? Then I'm going to teach it to every other kid in this world because I think it's really important.
Well, and I also think, you know, having taught that leadership class, I teach a leadership class now, and I think listening to that conversation, that was not about you. Like, that anger was not about you. That was totally on whoever yelled at you, you know, and that's whatever demons they're facing and insecurities that they have. But I also understand that it's very easy to internalize when someone is blaming you for something. But hopefully one day you look back on that and go, you know what? That has nothing to do with me and look what I'm doing. So that was the only reason I asked that question. I think sometimes we take on way too much. That's not ours to take on. But I think, you know, you look back though and it kicked you, but it kicked you in the right direction at the end of the day and what you're serving people. So you have this podcast going where you talk to former students, you talk to other students, you ask them meaningful questions about their experiences and what can be done better. And is that your main thing that you're doing, or what else are you doing?
Well, that is, I would say that's the impetus of everything else that I'm doing, because from that advice, like I said, I put it into practice in my own professional growth. And I thought that there are a lot of teachers who could use this information. And so I created a professional development program. It's 20 hours, but it's so beneficial. And I know how much it improved my own practice that I, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I know that so many teachers need these kind of conversations. We were not taught any of these things in our teacher training, and society's changing really fast. So like having a safe place, having a place where I can maybe ask a question that I can't ask my students is a great place to learn. And I do want to implement the leadership programming that I've created, because when that administrator told me I was not going to teach the leadership class, and I knew how important that leadership programming was for the kids that I was starting to really work with, I think these skills are so invaluable. And I don't know that there's an age limit to doing that work. I think, you know, maybe 13 is really where you start to think about how to put it into practice. But I, you know, I've talked to my own parents and they were like, I could probably use some of these skills that you're doing. And I was like, I think you could, actually.
I just like that you're getting this information and advice, not all of it, obviously, but from people that have to go through it, right? We've already gone through it, and it was a different time and it was a different period. And sure, there are things that we wish we could do, but we can't teach our current students the things that we wish had happened in the society version, you know, the version of society when we went through it. So by taking that, you know, part of me thinks you need to create something that is specifically for school administrators, because I feel like that's where a lot of the disconnect happens. And then it trickles down into the teachers and they become, you know, these great teachers like you were, become, I don't want to use the word, but I'm going to, jaded teachers because of that pressure put on them by people that, like you said, don't experience what that teacher's day-to-day is like, or what the student's day-to-day is like, or really don't understand that certain things that you're trying to implement don't work. They just don't work, right? And that you can't give us a rule for that. So you should make something for administrators if you haven't already.
Yeah, maybe. I think there are other people working on that, but yeah, I do.
But with the value that you're getting from these students, I feel like that's what people need to hear.
Yeah, I do think, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, the thing that I said about administrators not knowing what's going on in a teacher's life. I also have realized that as a teacher, I didn't know what was going on in my students' lives. I saw them for you know, way more than an administrator will see a teacher, but I didn't see them in the way that their lives were. I saw them for a moment in time, and there's so much we don't know about people when we only get them for a snippet.
I agree. I mean, it's almost kind of the reason that I love having these conversations is because, you know, everyone is in society is defined by their role, you know, unfortunately, right? But now we get to dig deeper and see like, why, how did we get there? Or why are we there? Or do we want to be there? You know, there's so many different questions that come from it. And so I like to end these conversations with a question that I think would be helpful. I think for you, if you like this version of you and the way that you see things and the way that you want to empower others, is there anything you could say to yourself if you could go back to when you didn't get that administrator job about like, because I know you were like, oh, how do I do this for another 30 years? What would you say to her?
I've been thinking about this question a lot. I think I would say to her, because I'm looking at a lot of teachers now and wondering what advice I would give them, is I would seek a coach. I would seek somebody who can see where you are, ask you what you want, and give you some guidance on how you might get there. And I think if I had had that person talk to me 10 years later when I was at the lowest point in my teaching career, I think I might have sought some other opportunities. I might have seen myself as a leader and not felt like I wasn't a leader, even though I didn't have a title. And I think that's really where that misnomer is that leaders don't need titles, but in society, we sure do celebrate those who do have titles.
We sure do. And, you know, part of when you were saying that also makes me think, had you spoken to someone that was a third party, unbiased, right, that could help direct you. You also, had you stayed and had you done all those things and had you decided to quit, you wouldn't have had, I don't think you would have had that, what else can I do? I'm only a teacher. I can only do this. There's nothing, you know, I feel like we all kind of need to realize that other people can help us, and to open up that door of vulnerability is usually pretty valuable.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that is where when people ask why I'm doing what I'm doing, I say, you know, as a teacher, I needed to manage my classroom, and I managed by putting kids in boxes. And when I put kids in boxes, I prevented them from being who they wanted to be. So I put myself in a box, and other people put me in a box by being just a teacher. And if there is one person out there that hears my message, is you're not just a teacher, and there are other things that teachers can and will do in their lives. And if you are feeling like you need a way out, or you need to see that way out, take that exercise. Write 200 things down that if, send me a LinkedIn message in 5 years, what would you tell me? And it may become clear to you that it's the classroom, it's not the classroom, it's working with kids in a different way. There are other things for us out there, and that is what I wish I knew, that just being a teacher isn't the only thing that I can do.
I mean, what else do I say to that? I think that's good advice. I think that's true of any industry, right? I think that's just as humans, we can do more than we are put in boxes and told we can do. You know, even if you get a degree in this, you can do other things. There are lots of people doing things that don't have degrees in that. So I think that's important to hear, but especially teachers. I think teachers are in a vulnerable space, especially now. So I hope, you know, teachers are listening to this and hear your story and see what you're doing and how you're doing it, and they want to connect with you, which we'll share all your information in the show notes. So I appreciate you being on the Life Shift today.
Matt, it was such a pleasure. And I really think what you're doing is incredible. And, you know, once you said, let's do the show, I have been thinking about my life so much. And I think that that's so incredible. And every time I listen to one of your podcasts, I think about, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that part of my life. And I think that it's okay to go back and think about how things changed and the paths we're on, because every moment in time is a choice. And sometimes we make the right ones and sometimes we don't, but all of it gets us to where we want to be.
I agree. I think sometimes the wrong choices are the right choices as well. So, you know, hearing your story, I know some of them were really hard for you, but I think at the end of the day, they put you where you need to be and they taught you what you needed to learn at that moment in time. So I appreciate you being on here. And those of you listening, I appreciate you listening to the Life Shift podcast. If you get a chance and you're liking what you hear, I would love a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and a review. That's also super helpful, but boost my feelings for that particular day when I see it. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.